The Vortex Blaster by E. E. Smith, Section 1.
Safety devices that do not protect.
The unsinkable ships that, before the days of Bergenholm and of atomic and cosmic energy, sank into the waters of the Earth. More particularly, safety devices which, while protecting against one agent of destruction, attract magnet-like another and worse. Such as the armored cable within the walls of a wooden house. It protects the electrical conductors within against accidental external shorts, but, inadequately grounded as it must of necessity be, it may attract, and upon occasion has attracted, the stupendous force of lightning, then fused, volatilized, flaming incandescent throughout the length, breadth, and height of a dwelling. That dwelling's existence thereafter is to be measured in minutes. Specifically, four lightning rods. The lightning rods protecting the chromium, glass, and plastic home of Neil Cloud. Those rods were adequately grounded, grounded with copper-silver cables the bigness of a strong man's arm. For Neil Cloud, atomic physicist, knew his lightning, and he was taking no chances whatever with the safety of his lovely wife and their three wonderful kids. He did not know, he did not even suspect, that, under certain conditions of atmospheric potential and of ground magnetic stress, his perfectly designed lightning rod system would become a super-powerful magnet for flying vortices of atomic disintegration. And now, Neil Cloud, atomic physicist, sat at his desk in a strained, dull apathy. His face was a yellowish-gray-white. His tendon hands gripped rigidly the arms of his chair. His eyes, hard and lifeless, stared unseeingly past the small, three-dimensional block portrait of all that had made his life worth living. For his guardian against lightning had been a vortex magnet at the moment when a luckless wight had attempted to abate the nuisance of a loose atomic vortex. That wight died, of course, they almost always do, and the vortex, instead of being destroyed, was simply broken up into an indefinite number of widely scattered new vortices, and one of these bits of furious, uncontrolled energy, resembling more nearly a handful of material rived from a sun than anything else with which ordinary man is familiar, darted toward and crashed downward to earth through Neil Cloud's new house. That home did not burn. It simply exploded. Nothing of it, in it or around it, stood a chance, for in a fractional second of time the place where it had been was a crater of seething, boiling lava. A crater which filled the atmosphere to a height of miles with poisonous vapors, which flooded all circumambient space with lethal radiations. Cosmically, the whole thing was infinitesimal. Ever since man learned how to liberate intra-atomic energy, the vortices of disintegration had been breaking out of control. Such accidents had been happening, were happening, and would continue indefinitely to happen. More than one world, perhaps, had been or would be consumed to the last gram by such loose atomic vortices. What of that? Of what real importance are a few grains of sand to an ocean beach 5,000 miles long, 100 miles wide, and 10 miles deep? And even to that individual grain of sand called Earth, or in modern parlance, Sol 3, or Tellus of Sol, or simply Tellus, the affair was of negligible importance. One man had died, but in dying he had added one more page to the thick bulk of negative results already on file. That Mrs. Cloud and her children had perished was merely unfortunate. The vortex itself was not yet a real threat to Tellus. It was a new one, and thus it would be a long time before it would become other than a local menace. And well before that could happen, before even the oldest of Tellus's loose vortices had eaten away much of her mass or poisoned much of her atmosphere, her scientists would have solved the problem. It was unthinkable that Tellus, the point of origin and the very center of galactic civilization, should cease to exist. But to Neil Cloud, the accident was the ultimate catastrophe. His personal universe.